Can we have a seat, gentlemen? We'd like to start our meeting. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll? You do first. I would like to pull item number. Item number 15 will be on the next event, the next one. Correct. Now, Madam Clerk, will you call the roll? Do we have a quorum?
Supervisor Swisha.
Here.
Borkowski.
Here.
Dmitrievich.
Here.
Thomas.
Present.
Harris.
Excuse.
Haas.
Here.
Mr. Chair.
Present.
We have a quorum.
We do have a quorum.
Yes.
Can we have a moment of silence for prayer for one of our colleagues who lost his grandmother? That's Ann Biddle. And just keep him in his prayers, okay? And his family. Thank you. Happy New Year to everyone. Glad everyone's back here today. Let's have fun today. Item number one.
From the County Executive appointing Frank Musilaki to the position of Director of Department of Transportation for Milwaukee County.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Chairman, Supervisors. I sit before you today asking for the confirmation of the Director of the Department of Transportation, Frank Musilaki. I hope that all of you have had the opportunity not only to meet with Mr. Musilaki, but to learn about the immediate impacts that he's having on the county. Within days of starting at the county, Mr. Musilaki, while touring some of the projects under his leadership, noticed that on Capitol, on College Avenue, that there were no streetlights on the recently renovated street. Within days, he had solved that problem at no cost to the county by securing that to the federal government. This is the kind of leadership we know that Mr. Musilaki can deliver for us on a regular basis. And we, as the county executive, as the county executive's representative and from the county executive, we do ask that you support Mr. Musilaki in his confirmation this morning. He is obviously here for any questions that you may have. I am finished.
Okay, Supervisor Thomas, this is what.
Move approval, Mr. Chairman. And thank you again for being here. Can you give us just a brief summary of your career? It seems like you've really had some great accolades in the area. Sure. More importantly, how you got started. Because someone, it appears, took a chance on you and you stepped up to the plate.
Sure. I started as a truck driver, member of the Teamsters Union, worked my way up to become president of the local and then secretary treasurer, which was the principal office. I did a number of things for the International Union as well, traveled for them extensively. Then I also was involved in a lot of political issues when I was with the Teamsters. I was pretty active. Governor Thompson at that time appointed me to the stadium board. I chaired the construction of Miller Park. I also chaired the Summerfest board for 2 years, negotiated the lease with the city of Milwaukee. And Governor Doyle at the time was Attorney General, and I had supported him in a couple of his elections, and I supported him for governor. He succeeded in winning the race and appointed me as the DOT secretary, and in my tenure at the 8 years that I was with the state, we did a number of high profile projects. One I'm sure that you're very familiar with, which is the Marquette Interchange. Under my tenure, we also designed the I-94 project, which is surpassed in size the cost of the Marquette Interchange, almost doubled in size. That project, when it's completed, will be $1.9 billion. And we also designed under my tenure the zoo interchange. which, you know, with budgetary constraints, we didn't start it quite when we wanted to start it. But I continue to live in Waukesha. However, I'm signing a lease. I will be moving into Milwaukee County on March 1st, and I'm proud to be here. I am always been a member of this community. I grew up just two blocks from Summerfest in the old Third Ward, and I'm pleased to be moving back into that neighborhood and be a part of the county again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning. Had Supervisor Thomas not made that motion, I would have, and I'm supporting it. I know that Mr. Busolacci has made a great effort to go around and meet with us supervisors, and I really appreciate that. I think it was kind of tough before with the holidays and everything going on. I've been exceptionally pleased with his accessibility. You know, he's gotten back to a lot of my constituent concerns right away. He sat down one by one and met with our transit riders, which I thought really meant a lot to me, and really listened. And not only listened, the next day had responses to some of our questions. So far I'm extremely impressed, and it also helps that you did live for a while, a wonderful Bayview, so
great.
That's great. And your history with organized labor, your excellent not only goals but reaching the goals in disadvantaged business when you were in the state, and the connections that you have in state and federal government, I know will serve this county well. So I support the approval, Mr. Chairman. So we're going to have fun.
Oh, we're having fun. In other words, since they make this love fest for you, I'm voting no.
Weishaar.
Aye.
Borkowski.
Aye.
Dmitrijevic.
Aye.
Thomas.
Aye.
Harris.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Cheer.
No. I don't know. Aye.
Six ayes, zero noes. The motion is approved.
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Come back over here now. All right. We're on transportation, item number two.
From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Managing Director, Milwaukee County Transit System, submitting an informational report regarding the MCTS mechanic training and bus warranty. At our December meeting, the committee requested a follow-up report on the state of good repair contracts to support a bus replacement program in 2013. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Grant.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. At the December meeting of the committee, we talked about the subjects of training that is being provided for MCTS mechanics and what could be done to have warranty repair work done in-house. Now, this report provides an overview of the training being provided to MCTS mechanics to keep their skills current, so that they are able to perform the repairs on the various mechanical, electrical, and pneumatic systems on our buses. Now, during the holidays, I had an opportunity to talk with some of our mechanics about training. That provided me with some good insight, I think, as to what we can do to improve the training that we do, particularly as it relates to providing that training near the end of the warranty period rather than towards the beginning of the warranty period. Now, since we began receiving delivery of new buses in 2010, our mechanics have been provided about or slightly over 2,200 hours of on-the-job training. On the bus brake system, the door system, the air conditioning system, the hydraulic system, and the wheelchair lift system, for example. Now, we are fortunate at this time, I think, to have a relatively standardized bus fleet. The entire fleet is comprised of New Flyer buses, which puts our mechanics in a unique position of having to only know one bus rather than eight or nine different types of buses, which was the case when I worked in our maintenance department about 15 or 20 years ago. Also, our costs are reduced for Milwaukee County taxpayers with a standardized fleet when we only have to maintain parts for one style of a bus rather than parts for 8 or 9 different bus manufacturers. So in regard to training, we try to keep up with the training, and we also try to avoid redundancy in training, given that the fleet is fairly standardized. Now, shifting to a warranty repair work, MCTS current warranty contract with the New Flyer Corporation requires that any defect during the warranty period be repaired by the bus manufacturer at no cost to MCTS. And we've outlined on page 2 of this report the current warranty terms with New Flyer. We have relied on the warranty for decades to keep costs down as low as possible for Milwaukee County. Since we last met in December, I spoke with a representative of the Cummins Engine Company to help better understand how their warranty policy works and to what extent can MCTX mechanics do warranty work on their equipment. I was advised that only establishments that are authorized to sell their products can perform warranty work on their engines. Also, my maintenance staff has advised me that if we were to start actually doing warranty work, any time spent above the standard repair times as determined by the equipment manufacturers would be borne solely at our cost. Now, we certainly will continue to do our best to keep costs down as much as possible. And with that in mind, and with respect to future bus purchases, I've directed our maintenance staff to work with the bus manufacturers to determine to what degree can our mechanics, in fact, perform warranty work on the buses. And we will be exploring that question as a part of the next bus purchase, which is scheduled for delivery in 2013. This report is informational, and if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the report. I might ask for this report in our December meeting. And the whole premise, looking at this report, I think we're really missing out on an opportunity. And most of us, I'm sure all of us here, purchased a car, and they always ask you to buy the additional warranty. There's always costs associated with that. That cost is used to offset any types of repairs. Well, in this report that was just given us by Mr. Grant, you're stating that you've had over 2,200 hours worth of training on the new buses, but now we're going to change that objective to, perform training. Where is it at?
Near the end of the warranty.
Yeah, towards the end of the warranty. At the end of the warranty, I think the premise should be we should train our mechanics now, so as that warranty progresses and it ultimately will expire, our mechanics will be prepared. We can also, and I'm sure we can do this, we've already purchased 90 buses in 2010 and 35 in 11. How many buses have been delivered thus far?
For what year, sir?
Just out of the total 125 that we've purchased since 2010, how many have been delivered?
125.
Oh, they all have?
Yes.
Okay. So the additional 55 that will be purchased in 2012 and also 2013 with the remaining 26 in 2014, can't we negotiate something in our contract that says that we'll train our mechanics on the front end to provide some type of preventive maintenance, which they're going to outsource to someone else. We can just bring that in-house up to a certain dollar amount and then get any additional training so as the warranty expires, we're prepared to handle those repairs. And with a uniform bus, I think we should be able to find some type of efficiency by streamlining that whole process.
Supervisor, that's exactly what I've asked our maintenance staff to explore with the bus manufacturer with this next bus purchase. And I'm hopeful that we will make some progress in that regard. You know, I also like to back up and just clarify with respect to training. The training that we provide to our mechanics as new buses come into the fleet, that will continue. I want to be clear about that. That will continue, particularly as new mechanics join the organization. What I was referring to is in the report is that I did get some comments from our mechanics, is that as the warranty period progresses along, they tend to lose those skills, and retraining would be helpful. So I've asked my staff to focus on that as well. So this training is an ongoing process.
Mr. Chairman, can I have item number two referred back to staff? Instead of just exploring our options, I think we should direct our staff to make it a priority to ensure that we receive some training up front. We negotiate somewhere within the contract that the additional 36 buses that we still have to purchase, that somewhere in that contract we can do preventive maintenance and some other type of work at a cost that we can pass on to the provider or whoever we're purchasing these buses from, and then ensure that we can get proper training for our mechanics on the front end, so that as the warranty wears out.
So that Thomas, if that's a motion, can you state that motion one more time? I want to refer back to staff for,
I guess, just a follow-up and more detailed work on the report that was sent to us to explore opportunities for maintenance training to receive benefits or some type of payment from warranty work. And I guess we can leave it at that right now.
Any questions of the motion? Madam Clerk, call the roll of the motion.
Weisheller?
Aye.
Borkowski?
Aye.
Dmitrievich?
Aye.
Thomas?
Aye.
Harris?
Aye.
Haas?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
7 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to refer back to staff is approved.
All right. Madam Clerk, item number 3.
From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Managing Director, Milwaukee County Transit System, submitting an informational report regarding transit vehicle replacement funding. At our December meeting, the committee requested a follow-up report on the state of the repair contract to support a bus replacement program in 2013, informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Grant, Mr. Massey.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Supervisors. The report that's before you is a response to the request made at the December cycle regarding the number of vehicles that have been purchased, the funding sources, and the outlook for the future vehicle replacement need. The first table, I'll just quickly point to the tables on here because I think it pretty much tells the story. The first table here is page one is the funding sources that have been used since 2010. For replacement. The second table is the vehicles that are in service currently and the years in which they were procured and the average mileage on those vehicles. And then the third table, I think, gets to what the request was, the primary request last cycle, which is the vehicle replacement need going out into the future. And if you look at that, the last line under the buses aging beyond 12 years. 12 years is basically the federal benchmark of when you can depreciate the vehicle fully. That shows the number of vehicles that will be needed beyond what is anticipated in the replacement schedule. So it shows that we have a continuing need for vehicle replacement out into basically the year 2018-2019.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was one that requested this information, and I'm very happy with the information that we received because I was, you know, we've had in the last couple of years various forms of funding, and we've done some large purchases of buses as, you know, what we spoke about in the previous question. So I find this information very helpful, and I think that our colleagues will too, so I'm going to make a motion to receive and place on file. Mr. Chairman.
We have a motion to receive first of all. Mr. Grant Hollis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two quick questions. Mr. Grant, second. Mr. Grant. Do we have any, does MCTS have any buses that are not in active service? I imagine you probably do not have them laying around somewhere. You're probably in use or not in use most of the time, is that correct?
For the most part, all buses are in use.
The only time I think that we would have a vehicle that would not be used is that substantially damaged, an accident, and the cost to repair was too high. And we're also looking at the fact that for us probably here to take this life cycle, but for the most part, from all the vehicle service.
That's very logical. Now, the purchases of the new buses and the existing fleet that you have, how is the some of these have been outfitted with shields, and many of them do not yet have shields. Is that correct, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, you provide at this time. I believe we have about 25 buses with a prototype protective shield at the driver's compartment area as a result of the 2012 budget. We'll be looking at installing shields on all buses following for the Pure Plus procurement that's expected to be delivered in year 2013. So right now we have 25 shields out there. We are in the process, if you will, working to identify and locate a shield that would be specified for future bus purchases, and we're working with the transit drivers union in that regard.
So currently 25 of the buses do have shields, and you expect all will have shields by 2013, or sometime within 2013?
The plan at this time is to have shields installed on vehicles as they are purchased. For example, in the year 2013, we only expect to receive maybe 26 vehicles. So we'll be 26 additional shields in 2013. If we stay on the bus replacement cycle as was laid out in this report, for example, in the year 2014, we would anticipate that there would be 35 additional buses, which would also include shields.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Is it possible to retrofit the existing fleet there so it can use the shields? So those buses can use shields? Is it possible to get shields for the existing fleet? You said they're getting the shields as they are brought new. Can we get shields separately and retrofit them to be used in the fleet, say, the 4200s?
We will be taking a look at that, Supervisor. A second part of that budget directive was to seek out funding that would allow us to outfit the existing fleet with shields as well.
And do you have any timeline for that exploration?
I do not have a timeline at this point, but it's something that our maintenance department is looking at. As a matter of fact, I believe we have a meeting scheduled next week with the transit drivers to discuss this subject.
And if it may, Mr. Chairman, the question of fare boxes is often with us.
We will read into that with the fare boxes.
Okay.
That's on this agenda.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed in 2010 we have 100% federal funding. That's the stimulus funding, correct?
Yes, Mr.
Right. Well, I just wanted to make sure I had my acronym right. The ARRA funding, more commonly known as the stimulus funding, for all those who claim that Milwaukee County never got any benefit from the stimulus funding. Here's a prime example where we have 45 buses that were purchased 100% by the federal government. So that's a significant impact on our local budget and infrastructure. Do we still keep the decal on them for those buses that were purchased so the public knows what that their federal dollars went for?
Yes, the decals are particularly on those buses.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So about Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You put out a bid for the shields, for new shields. Have you done that already?
Not at this time.
You will be putting that out?
I anticipate that we will be incorporating a specification within or required within our bus specification for a shield. The initial step is to our maintenance staff. The direction of our deputy director is to be able to meet with and identify a shield that we think will work best for the drivers and on the buses. Once we've identified accessible shields, we will incorporate that into bus specification.
So ATU 998 will be involved in that process prior to going out to the program. I guess input on what types of shields you'd like to see on the buses, the design, whatever sort of features are required of them.
That's correct. And if Mr. Juno was here, my understanding is we have a meeting scheduled next week. Is that correct?
Yes. Monday. Are there representatives from ATU 998 that may want to?
That's true. That being said.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real quick, on the total bought up to this year have been, or purchased, not including 2012, have been 125, as you said. I thought I understood that correctly, and we currently have them all in the fleet. Are those all, because I get this question commonly, those are all the, are they the ultra-low sulfur diesel, or are we just calling that clean fuel now? What are they in regards to, I know they're running cleaner and quieter, it's what I'm hearing, so I just wanted to know, what would you refer to that?
They are commonly referred to as clean diesel. Particulate and sulfur levels, emission levels on those buses are in compliance with Environmental Protection Agency engine standards for the year 2000. So the vehicles are running really clean with very, very low emissions, which is certainly helpful for our ozone and our environment.
And as we continue to purchase up through 2014, unless there's major changes in the industry, they'll be very similar to the ones that we've, the 125 we've purchased so far. I mean, we're continuing with that same vendor. Or at least this, I mean, maybe 2014 is a bit far out, but at least in the next year or two.
All equipment manufacturers will be required to meet those EPA standards.
No, sir, I'm not talking about just EPA, I just mean the actual model of the bus. The new bus is 125. That similar style is what we're going to continue to purchase.
I would anticipate that would surprise you, but I want to be clear because we go out for competitive bidding.
Okay.
I don't know who the bus manufacturer would be or who would be the successful bidder, but we would anticipate that our spec is going to change relatively a little.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
So, just for clarity, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Grant, you indicated we could have a meeting with ATU 998 on Monday.
Right.
Now, will they have input into the decision, or is this just a meeting where you're going to brief them on what you're going to do?
The purpose is to have input.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Mr. Ronald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Grant, how active has ATU been in the shield selection process up to this point?
We, prior to budget directives, seat shields and all of us, we actually had a committee form that included at ATU to explore prototypes on the protective shields with the input of ATU and our staff. We actually came up with two designs during that process. The second design is currently on the buses, so I would say that we've made an earnest effort to involve the union as much as possible.
Well, thank you for the involvement, to whatever extent that was. Please do continue to active dialogue with them, so they have to use these. They will use, hopefully benefit from these every day. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? If not, we have a motion to receive and place on file. Madam Clerk, call the roll.
Wyshetta?
Aye.
Murkowski?
Aye.
Dmitrievich?
Aye.
Thomas?
Aye.
Harris?
Aye.
Haas?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Seven ayes, zero noes. The motion to receive and place on file is approved.
Madam Clerk, item number four.
From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Managing Director, Milwaukee County Transit System, submitting an informational report regarding the 2012 Wisconsin Employment Transportation Assistance Program Award. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Right. Mr. Chairman and committee members, we are pleased to inform you that MCTS has been granted a WETAP grant for calendar year 2012. WETAP grants were announced on November 29th of 2011 by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. The grant awarded to Milwaukee County for calendar year 2012 is $784,500. That funding will be used to continue extended service on five bus routes. There are some areas within Milwaukee County and times during the day or week that we do not normally operate a bus service due to low ridership. This grant allows the transit system to continue operating bus service in those areas so that workers can have mobility and stay connected with jobs. Now, for example, on the first page of this report, I'll use Route 12 as an example. We do not normally operate Route 12 service north of Good Hope Road on Saturdays and Sundays. With this funding, we are able to continue providing that service on weekends from Good Hope Road to Cherrywood Lane, which is very near the county line, as a result of this funding opportunity. I should also mention that the 2012 budget included a provision for discontinuation of this extended service if we were not successful in our application for funding for 2012. Given that our application for funding was approved, extended service on routes 12, 17, 27, 28, and 54 will be continued in operation for 2012. This report is informational. Do you have any questions?
Any questions? If not, Madam Clerk, item number five.
From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Managing Director, Milwaukee County Transit System, submitting an informational report regarding bus service at South Ridge Mall. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Grant. Mr. Goodjob.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, this informational report was prepared to inform you of discussions that we have been having with management at South Ridge Mall and how possible changes at the mall could impact operation of transit service on the mall property. MTS has operated public transportation service to South Ridge Mall for 42 years. Currently, we operate four regular routes that provide curbside service on a daily basis at the entrances of the mall. In addition, we operate one freeway flyer route that provides express service for commuters to and from the downtown area on weekdays only. In 2011, representatives of the transit system and the Milwaukee County Department of Transportation had several meetings with representatives of the mall on the subject of MTS bus operations on the mall property. Issues that were discussed range from complaints of noise by buses to limiting bus service on the mall property only during the hours that the mall was actually open. Now, the primary issue that was raised and brought to our attention was a request for MCTS to enter into a fee-based bus service licensing agreement to continue operation of bus service on the mall roadways. Now, in June of 2011, we did seek a verbal opinion from Corporation Counsel. At that time, that counsel was Tim Karas-Gavitz, and Mr. Karas-Gavitz advised us that the terms of the licensing agreement was not in the best interest of Milwaukee County because it had an open-ended basis of liability. Subsequently, we were asked to attend a meeting with South Ridge in October of 2011. The then director of the Department of Public Works, Jack Dakarian, Brian Drastic, and myself met with the new manager of South Ridge Mall on the subject of bus service at the mall. We were informed at that time that the mall planned continue its renovation work and that they expected to begin work on the south end of the mall in late January or February, and at that time we will be required to operate bus services off property. Now, at the time of that I prepared this report, we had sought through the Department of Transportation, and, but had not been given a firm determination by the mall management on this issue of operating transit service on the mall roadways. But we have continued to operate service to the mall as we have done in the past. Now, yesterday I was informed by Mr. Drasnick that a meeting is being scheduled with Southridge in an effort to work towards resolving this issue. We believe that the public benefits from accessible service to the mall. We are trying to get people to jobs and to shopping. So we're hopeful that we can work with the Simon Property Group in a way that will continue transit service, keep it accessible, keep it safe and convenient for both mall patrons as well as their employees.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, first of all, the meeting that's been scheduled with Southridge is not about bus services. It's about the construction. We have not scheduled a meeting with them about the bus service because, quite frankly, I think we resolved this issue. We had a little boxing match in the media last week, and I believe that Simon Properties has issued a statement that says that they do not have any intention on disrupting bus service at Southridge. Certainly the department would sit down, and if there needs to be discussion, we're never going to turn our back. However, having said that, at least since I've been on board, my personal opinion is that those buses have been going in there forever, and I just see what the potential for people with disabilities, elderly people, would have if they're dropped off away from that shopping center. So I believe we've been very clear as a department, as the county, on this issue, and I would hope that that Simon Properties just let's the service the way it is. But we can, we can live with that, and we're certainly not going to enter into an agreement, and we're not going to pay any money. I mean, I can tell you that right now. I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, you'd make that decision, but I certainly wouldn't recommend it. So that's about where we're at. I think the buses are running.
So, Nasty, do you have any comments with us?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just echo the director's opinion on that. Certainly poor people with disabilities who would try to gain employment or use the mall for its public purpose, intended purpose, it's important to have reasonable accommodations and access to that property. We think that the present plan for 43 years has really provided that. We know that many people with disabilities do make use of fixed route service. That's an economic benefit for them. Certainly to the county, and importantly, I think, to the shopkeepers at the mall. I'm not sure practically how it is that the Simon property would provide an accessible path to travel from curbside to the mall for people with disabilities, and the present plan is really universally accessible. To place people the distance that being proposed from the curb at 76th Street would be a hazard, I think, for a great number of people, including those of us who have disabilities, elders as well. We also think that there are some residential properties that are located on the mall property. Clearly would be a disadvantage to them as well. So I think that for the long-term interest, the director and Mr. Grant have spoken to the concerns we would have. We think it would be an essential disruption Our commission for persons with disabilities is also registered its concerns in opposition to the previously stated plan. Are appreciative that the second property folks have recanted the previous position.
Savannah Farkas against the record. Me too.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, so often I think down here, and I'm as guilty, we don't take the opportunity to compliment people. And I just want to let people like Don Natsky and his commission know, and Mr. Busalaki, our colleague, Supervisor Sanfilippo, whose district is in this. I think the measure of an item is determined by how quickly the opposition coalesces. And this misguided attempt by Southridge, if nothing else, proved that if they want to bring something like this back, the opposition is going to be more empowered than ever before. And I'm glad that we didn't have to drag this thing through the mud, but it's encouraging that when groups of people have to get together as advocates, they are able to do that, and that's kudos to many people, so I say thank you.
So that's me, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering, do you know, are there any representatives in the audience from the Southridge Corporation?
No.
Or the owners? No, okay. And then number two, I guess I got a number of phone calls from residents in my district who shared the same shock as you. So when you had those conversations after 42 years of service, what is it that changed that they no longer wanted to be part of the Milwaukee County Transit System?
Well, Supervisor, I can just say that I personally have not had any contact with Simon Properties. Brian Dranzik in our office had talked to them and did have meetings with them. But I can tell you that since November 1st, our opinion as a department-wide, along with MCTS, has been that this is not something that we think is in the best interest of the taxpayer of Milwaukee County. Simply put, I can't put it any better than that. This is you know, just far too important to the county. And you know, we're putting an emphasis on transit, and I don't think this would help us in any way, putting emphasis on transit, if we're doing this to people.
And also I'd add that while Southridge itself is a destination, it's an important transfer point too. Many people use that as a transfer area because of so many buses kind of being able to turn around and whatnot there. So, I was very disappointed to hear it, and I'm, like Supervisor Borkowski, happy to hear that there's been some change of heart, and we'll see how things go. So thank you.
Anyone else have any comments? Supervisor.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair. I just want to indicate that I got quite a few contacts. I want to make both the board aware and the administration on the South Shore and along Route 55, 15, which goes along Fay K and serves Supervisor Haas, as Major Abich, well familiar with this. There are a lot of senior centers that are located on those bus routes, specifically to give seniors an opportunity to use the bus. And a lot of these seniors do not have automobile transportation. So they locate on those routes, and even the administration of these senior centers contact me. This has been very concerning to them. They use the 15 and transfer onto the 55, and then they get to Southridge. That is their main area of shopping for clothing and all kinds of other needs. So this is going to be an issue. If it raises its ugly head again, we will certainly be watching it. But this is not going to escape our viewpoint. I appreciate all the comments that were made. I just want to assure my constituents that were contacting me, mostly elderly, mostly women, that were very concerned about this kind of attitude from the shopping center. These are all folks that actually go there and shop. So thank you for that opportunity. I just want to make sure that those constituents had a voice here.
Thank you.
Supervisor Mayo,
comment? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a comment. I think that we worked hard to make sure that we have provided a very safe, clean, real low noise environment for our transportation buses.
I don't understand why sophomores wouldn't even come up the rear of their head and kill someone like that. We, every day we take 1,200 people to sophomore, to shop, to patronize all the stores within that area. We also make sure that we are good tenants while we're owning properties. Mr. Grant, Mr. Burns, how many incidents have we had at Southridge on our bus association within the last 10 years?
I don't have the answer.
You don't know. Can you get that back to me? Because I would like to know. Because I would like to know the other concerns that they had at first. Said too much noise. Give me a break. We take their employees down to Southridge. Now they don't want us there in the morning. How will the employees get there on time if they don't have no other transportation? But I would like to thank Southridge for changing their mind. They realize that we are an asset to their establishment. But all these false accusations, we try to be a good partner with Southridge. We've got to continue to be a partner. And I hope I continue to work very hard to make sure we keep the noise down, have no accidents, don't tear up their pavement. I wonder what when they have seniors come with big buses every time and do their tours of Southridge and shop. Do they charge those buses? What about those people who deliver supplies to stores? Do they charge those truckers? I'm just curious. If we are a good tenant, a good partner, and bring things there, it should work with Milwaukee County to continue to work there. We try to make sure that we serve the whole county with transportation. And I can't see a senior or anyone with a disability right now in this cold walking from the curbside all the way over there. Something's wrong with that picture. So I'm happy that they decided to change their mind and work with us and continue to work with their dialogue together. Thank you for your hard work to solve this problem. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments by committee members? Thank you. Number five is an informational report. Madam Clerk, could you call item six?
From the Director, Department of Transportation and Public Works, and the Managing Director, Milwaukee County Transit System, submitting an informational report providing an update on the new fare collection system. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chairman, this information report is the update since January of 2007. Just to give you a brief update on where we are with the fare collection system. We have received bids on the fare collection system. Bidders made presentations during the week of December 5th, and we expect to have a final price in front of us on January 31 of this year. Following receipt of the final pricing, we will review the gifts that have been received, and we expect to issue a letter of intent to award by the first quarter of this year. Now, presentations by the bidders in December, during those presentations, they told us that they would be up to 24 months to have the system fully installed and operational. Now, that came as quite a surprise to us that development of the smart car system takes so long. But I realized that we're not buying a product off the shelf. The project entails extensive development, extensive programming, and testing. But we do expect to work with whomever the successful bidder would be to try to get this timeline shorter. And I guess we project 5 years of sales. Now, I'd like to talk to you about big transfers. There's been some concern by HMU and our providers about whether or not we should be purchasing a fare collection system that does not eliminate big transfers. I'd like to focus my comments on that issue. There's no dispute in payment affairs and misuse of transfers has been an ongoing source of conflict between our bus drivers and our customers. We understand that. There's no dispute about that. The issue is very real. And we are trying to address that issue as part of this procurement so that these types of disputes will go away. Now, last week I met with prepping and all this stuff. We did talk at length while working together to see if we can devise a way to accelerate the process of phasing out these paper transfers. And we agreed that we will be working together on that. We also, during that meeting, talked about management's rationale for recommending that we gradually phase out these paper transfers rather than buy accessory equipment that automatically dispenses the transfer. Now, this accessory equipment, I'm on page 3 of the report, is referred to as a ticket reader and imaging machine. We've dubbed it as a trim unit. It's important to know that the trim unit does not eliminate transfers. Instead, it replaces the paper transfer that we currently have with a card-type transfer that is dispensed by a machine called a trim unit. Now, so in effect, even if we were to buy this trim unit or require that this trim unit come with the fare collection system, transfers will continue to be part of the fare structure, but the difference would be that the driver would not be physically handed the transfer to our customers. Now, the trim unit was in fact considered as part of the overall evaluation process, but it was not selected as the best alternative, in part due to added capital and operating costs. Each trim unit cost about $2,000. That would add about $800,000 to the capital cost of purchasing the spare collection system. And in addition, each trim unit would have to be refilled on a daily basis. The card stock would have somewhat of that. So in looking at the time and labor that would be needed to refill these on a daily basis, maintenance costs of servicing the units, we estimate if we were to go with that particular system, we would be adding in a neighborhood of $500,000 to $875,000 in operating costs annually. So, given the complexity of the of this card system, it will take some time to develop it and test it. Our goal is to make purchase a system that will be easy, simple for our riders to use, and we are certainly trying to avoid extra costs for taxpayers. I should also mention in closing that I talked with the chair of the Transit Services Advisory Group last week, and the committee had a concern, about the continued use of paper transfers. It was brought to my attention that they felt that they had not been briefed on the status of the fair collection system. So I've assured him that we'll change that. We understand what they're trying to do. We have the same interests. Everything we do has interests. Everything we do is about our riders. So we certainly want to work with our advisory group. I'm sure that the concerns that they have raised regarding having input will be addressed. Mr. Jewell and I did meet with the chairman, Dell. I believe it was in late November. Mr. Jewell attended the meeting last week. I'm sure the department is going to make sure that the information that they need to help them do their job is there, so I will be involved in that process. This report is informational. If there are any questions about the video, address those.
So there are questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little concerned when we start to get into these customized systems because all of a sudden costs tend to escalate exponentially. I just find it hard to believe that we just can't, we're not the first person to run a bus system, that we can't find something more off the shelf, a little bit more simplistic. And even the concept of transfers, maybe looking at in. You know, I noticed there is a paragraph in here saying that we're
no changes are made to the current fare policy, well, maybe this is the time that we need to take a serious look at that and the whole concept of having a transfer, that you just buy a ticket for one, two, whatever dollars, and that you can ride anywhere on any bus all day long. Maybe that's just the road. Because I find it just amazing that we think that we're going to spend potentially $800,000 to read a 35-cent transfer or something like that. It just, to me, the math doesn't quite work out, and it's way too complicated. Just keep it simple and, you know, let it go from there.
Mr. Chairman, if I can ask Mr. Bain to join me. Mr. Bain has been one of our lead project managers on the fare collection system, and so he's very well versed with the system. Mr. Bain is our director of administration. Is responsible for our IT function, human resources, air transit, and procurement functions. Just to comment on the supervisor's point, I think one of the things that Mr. Simonis and I talked about last week was looking at what we can do now with respect to the air structure. You know, what changes may be made so that we can accelerate the process of facing up different transfers. We certainly don't want to shock the public. Just turn off the switch, so to speak, over the numbers. We don't want to just be a long term drag down process. We want to get it done in the background.
Yes, if Mr. Bain has any comments.
Mr. Bain, do you have any comments right now?
I'm not sure of the question, Supervisor, regarding the transfer cost. So,
well, I guess my, Mr. Chairman, I would just hope that we would look at the simplest system possible, so we don't end up into, like I said, our track record with some of these customized systems have become extraordinarily expensive over time, and that, at least from my point of view, if a change in our fare policy is needed, I don't want you to feel that you're constrained by that. If there's a better system that saves us money and is better for the public, I want you to look at all options and not be restrained by, you know, maybe an old policy that should be scrapped and move forward. So that's all I'd like to see.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor, that's an excellent point. And dealing with a system like this, it's not as much customization as it is defining the fare policy and the rules regarding the fare structure. And it's more of a communications, almost a computerization project than an equipment project. So we'll have effectively 400 computers out there on each bus talking to garage computers, which are communicating with the central computer, which is in contact with smart card reload systems, and also in contact with a web system that will allow people to automatically add value or another weekly pass to their card. I know that explanation sounds quite complicated. That's what leads to the long development time and the testing and making sure that all of that structure is in place. From the customer's perspective, it will be a simple system in that they'll have a card with their fare loaded on it. They'll simply tap that card against a card reader, and the card itself has memory, much like a computer. This is the direction that the industry is going and the direction that the industry has been. The benefit for the passenger is that it will be a simple system. So I know I'm kind of touching on both sides of the perspective, but your point is well made, and that's one of the things that we look to explore with the Transit Services Advisory Committee, is their evaluation of fare structure as riders and users of the system.
Thank you.
So, Sarah.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I would first like to go back to item one and vote in the affirmative. I realize I was a little bit tardy.
Anybody there? I do.
I warned you that I was going to be a little
I'm
bit
tardy. I'm just joking. If there's no objection, please show the record that you left here. Vote in the affirmative on item number one.
Thank you.
All right.
And I do have a few follow-up questions myself in regard to this new system that we're talking about putting in place for the fare cards. And what concerns me, first of all, is this dollar amount that we are going to be spending to sort of, I want to say retrofitting a little bit. It sounds like that's sort of what we're doing, is retrofitting our system. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Supervisors, I would refer to it as a new system. Other transit systems across the country have made incremental steps to improving their fare collection system. This is one large leap, which is, affords us the opportunity to look at what other systems have done across the nation and learn from perhaps some of their missteps. But it is a completely new system.
And I appreciate that response, but I guess we need to also think about not only, I mean, I get the whole we have to look out for the customer, the passengers, our the public. I think that's a fair assessment on a number of things that you mentioned, but I think what we fail to address are the drivers who are actually putting their lives on the line currently to, you know, for these transfers. And I would like to see that, or I guess I would say is, with the money that we're spending on these units, this trim unit, and to be exact, maybe there could be a marketing strategy to help this process be more streamlined, where we don't have to go to the paper. We can just eliminate the paper altogether and do a huge marketing, use that money for marketing. I think, you know, what we do too often is try to come back on the back end and try to fix our problems versus looking at it on the front end. And this is basically what I see is us, you know, trying to coming back later to fix our problems versus trying to address them now. So that's something I would put out there to the MCTS, the Transportation Department, to look at, you know, how we can use that money for marketing versus this whole trim system and really try to eliminate these transfers. Again, I want to stress that people's lives are on the line. We have bus drivers who are getting beat, who are losing their lives, who leave this job stressed out because of these transfers alone. So we need to take that seriously. I also want to ask, too, what are the drivers' inputs with this system? I mean, are they well aware of this information? Because you're coming up and telling us this, but when are they getting this information? Because it seems to me that they're not getting it as quickly as possible in order to make good decisions and help you in this decision making. It doesn't seem like they're really at the table.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor, we do not always involve the bus operators' union in procurement. At times we do. At times they specifically request it. It's actually quite rare in that the only procurement I recall in the past decade or so is the healthcare benefits program. But your message is loud and clear. And we, as Mr. Grant indicated, met with the union last week, and I expect that there will be follow-up meetings in regards to this subject. And it's a welcome aspect of the project.
Thank you. I appreciate you acknowledging this, but I really have a problem with how do you know that, and I understand you're in procurement, I get that, but I guess we got to do a better job of including everyone's voices at the table. I can't understand how do you justify buying a piece of equipment that's going to affect the person who is on the front line and they don't even get an input. That is a problem, and we really need to fix that. So with that said, I'm done with my question, so thank you.
Okay, Mr. Banks, I'd like to inform you that we have a number of times from this committee actually worked with the committee, especially on the shields when they said they couldn't do it with a glare. And also we had a meeting yesterday talking about the same fare boxes. We came to an agreement that they are, will have some ideas exactly what's going on with the fare boxes. Anyone else from here? Because we do have a... McKevitt?
Thank you. I had a question on the new timetable, because I just believe that when we started this process a while ago, when this idea came up, the 24 months, I feel like this is the first time I've ever heard that. I mean, that's a long, long time. And I think the public was expecting something a little bit different. But I also value the fact that we want to test it and make sure that it works out, and it doesn't pay to put a system on there that people don't know how to use. Does that, Mr. Chairman, now extended deadline, or timeline, I should say, excuse me, does that harm any of our funding sources? Because I guess it's just so much longer than I thought. It's not going to put in harm our original funding sources for this project. That's I was worried about that.
Mr. Drafis. Mr. Chairman, members, the funding source for this is our funding. The time frame in which we have to get the money spent first is 2015.
Okay.
September 2015.
So, okay, well, we're pushing up against that depending when the bids are done, but thank you for that. And then as a follow-up, I know Supervisor Harris did a great job speaking on the transfers. I guess what I'm reading through here on your report, I see a lot of, it seems like it's specifically surrounding the cash fair customers that we're concerned about. And I guess the way that I read it, it appeared to me that what you're saying to us in that report is that the transfer system would only be around for a couple months or so until, or the paper transfer system. It seemed like it was just going to be a temporary situation until people got used to filling their smart card. That was the way that I read it, unless I misunderstood it.
Our goal is to slowly phase out paper transfers. Our goal is to make that transition quickly and as smoothly as possible.
And then my last comment or question, Mr. Chairman, is I guess I'm just interested, perhaps for the next meeting, what are other, because so many other systems, I feel like we're one of the very last that doesn't have a smart card system, have, you know, so many systems around the country have, well, even around the world, have the smart card technology. And I guess I'm wondering, I'd like to know perhaps for the next meeting how they, you know, confronted this challenge of the cash fare. Did they do months of a slow, you know, kind of implementation, or how did that work? What did they do? What did they see? That'd be interesting information for me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor, there are about a dozen U.S. cities, larger cities, with smart card technology. Smart card is a contactless card with an antenna and a chip inside, and these cities primarily adapted smart card from rail structure that was in their communities. And when we look at a community like Chicago, they've done the incremental steps in their fare collection system in that they've gone from a very basic fare box to a fare box that issues a magnetic card transfer to incorporating other magnetic cards, which are more like your typical credit card. And now they've gone to the contactless smart cards within the past decade ago. And they've since eliminated their paper transfer because of all of the mechanical issues with those machines that distribute the transfers. So if we look at that as an example, that would be the direction we'd want to go towards. But before they made that leap, they had a saturation point in the community with their contactless smart cards. And I don't even want to tell you where they're going next, because they have a fully functioning fare system. But I will. They're spending $200 million over a decade to allow people to tap their contactless credit card. So it gives you an idea of the direction that the industry is going and the dollars involved. We're a long ways away from that, and some of you may have been approached by people that say we should be going to credit cards. That is still an evolving technology. So what we're doing is jumping into a fare collection improvement that's not early 1980s technology, and it's not 2015 technology. It's right where we need to be.
Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, if I can add, we are, you know, certainly looking at potential changes in the fare structure, and to the degree that we can do that early on, we certainly will be coming back to this committee and having some further discussion. So some of the preliminary research that we've learned, for example, is that in some systems what they've done to eliminate paper transfers is to go with a one-day pass. Okay. And also in other systems what they've done is simply inform the public that each time you board the bus you will have to pay cash fare. No transfers are issued at all. So we're looking at what other systems are doing. And we're certainly we'll be taking that into consideration as we get closer to coming back to this committee with recommendations on how possibly the fare structure can be changed to be integrated within the smart card system that we're looking at.
Mr. Grant, thank you, but we've been pushing what the state has for the long since we talked about this fare box. So that's nothing new. We just need to get this fare box implemented so we can have a day pass. So that's the Pekowski. I'm sorry. Oh, he wants. Can you cheer for this man? He wants cheerleaders and everything else. So that's Pekowski. You have the floor. You want him to clap too?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know what it is with me today with my darn compliments. Shame on me. But as the board's representative to TSAC, I will tell you that I think for the first time I recognize that the administration finally gives that group a lot of respect. I will tell you at the last meeting, Mr. Juno was there, Ms. Jans was there, Mr. Bain was there. They took both barrels from a lot of people, including Mr. Simonis and Ms. Walker. So I will tell you that from the TSAC standpoint, I think that we feel that we've been heard. We should also, Martin Weddle is on that, as is Ledette Austin. But I'm not going to belabor the point about how 9NH needs to get involved with this whole thing, but from TSAC's point, I think that we're finally starting to, if nothing else, get some respect. They're coming to the meetings. They're hearing us out. And for that, I'm grateful.
All right. We have 2 minutes. Oh, from the hall. Matt's home.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Sir.
Oh, sorry. That's right.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Okay. I was wondering, Mr. Chairman, if MCTS could tell us how much money is lost due to the fraudulent use of transfers.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor, transit systems nationwide cannot answer that question. There have been independent researchers that have done surveys that have tried to evaluate it. One transit system in Seattle came up with a very low percentage number. Their primary problem was attributed to a free fare zone in the downtown area. Once those vehicles left that area, there was some fraud going on. It's an excellent question, and it's not a question that any transit system in the nation can answer.
I would add, Mr. Chairman and supervisors, that transit systems that have switched over to the smart cards did in fact see an increase in revenue.
And Mr. Chair, Supervisor, if I could just attribute that to the fact that that contactless card does the job of the bus operator insofar as validating the expiration date on that fare form. So when you flash a weekly pass, the machine knows whether that's a valid pass. And if the bus operator is distracted by something and is unable to see that pass entirely, they won't just let it pass. The machine will validate that. So there are some benefits to the bus operator, some technology that we're looking to adopt.
Okay. A few more questions, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, sir.
Go ahead.
I know anecdotally that I know of an operator that was able to get on the bus, apparently without being recognized by his colleagues, and he was able to use a transfer to ride for 6 hours. So that's one story from, you know, from one day. I know you are giving, you're saying, we cannot answer that for you, sir, but we know it exists. We know we're losing a lot of money to the fraudulent use of fares. I am personally very interested as a representative and supervisor in moving towards these one-day fares. I'm very interested in that. I think it could be fantastic. I know it would be much easier to do with the new fare boxes. Also interested in some of these, the no-transfer fare. We'll call that. You pay a much smaller amount than the current $225 fare. You get on direct one way, no transfer. I want to explore that, and I think we need to explore it sooner, much sooner rather than later. The talk of the slow implementation of the new trim system, the new fare boxes, is very curious to me because, of course, in about 10 days, we're going to implement some major changes to many routes. And I came to this position from previously I was in the software industry, which moves
99% of the speed of light than from the newspaper industry, which moves at about a quarter of the speed of a walking individual.
Yeah, that was pretty good one there.
Thank you, Mr. Charles. And, well, we need not comment on the speed of our body here. That said, I'm curious, you know, the manufacturer's saying it may take 2 years to do this. My gosh, if I was in a business that took 2 years to get anything done, unless I'm making some kind of, you know, super premium custom guitars or I don't know what, I don't think I'd be in business that long if I had to make my customers wait 2 years to get a really good improvements and a major improvement on these systems. I do urge you, please, and I know you are interested in accelerating as well, please press hard as reasonably hard as you can, which is pretty good. Get it done quite a bit faster. You know, we need this to save money, as you said. Smart car systems has resulted in increased revenue. Ridership. God knows we need that. Two more questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, sir. What does it cost us now? I have seen the very impressive printing setup that MCTS has at the 17th Fond du Lac, where the transcripts are printed every day in mass for months ahead of time. How much does that cost? I know paper is not cheap. I once published a newspaper. I know it ain't cheap now. And second, you referred to the cost of adding the new cards to the trim machines, basically the new transfer cards and machine issues. Well, it also, I believe, costs us money to pay the employees to restock the transfers, and then the issues that follow the use of transfers have their own costs as well. I'm curious, what's the cost us right now to print and deploy all the current paper transfers?
We have I'm proud to say that we have a very effective printing operation at the transit system. Mr. Chairman and Supervisors.
Yeah, talk a little bit about it.
I believe the cost, and I'm sure Mr. Bain knows as he's been working with this for the last 2 years, day in and day out, but I believe the cost of producing a paper transfer today is about a penny. Is that correct?
I would like to verify the cost because, like any printing, you print massive amounts so that you don't run out. Annually, I would estimate around $200,000, but I would like to verify that for the supervisor. Additionally, I just would like to point out that the stocking of the transfers is much like loading printer paper into a printer. And when your printer jams, it's easy to open it up and pull that out of the shop and put it back together. In a fare box, you never open that on the road. There isn't any ability for a bus operator to open it on the road. So there are certainly problems with transfers. And a ticket reading and issuing machine doesn't negate all problems. It comes with its own set of additional problems. And if a passenger is standing there waiting for a transfer and the machine can't issue it, it puts us into a position of having to deploy a solution, which would be a supervisory personnel with a key, maybe additional paper stock, and you dang well better hope that you don't buy hundreds of thousands of reams of paper that jam your printers like we all have. Hopefully that was a decade or two ago. You could run into the same situation with the mechanical solution.
I will echo much of what Supervisor Harris said, the need to think forward ahead of the bend rather than dealing with these things. Actually, on page 30 of your report here, it says, after you discuss the implementation and cost of the trim system, the last two lines, it says, the industry is moving away from trim units web systems to contactless systems for user use, customer convenience, and reduce operational costs. I thank you for including that perspective, and that's why I think we should definitely look towards these contactless systems, if at all possible. And we definitely need to educate the riders on how to use them. That should be a big undertaking. I plan to help people the next 10 days get to understand the new express bus system. This would be perhaps an even greater change. Yes, and I'll close by asking, what does it mean, PC load letter? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Huh? You come on. We move slow. Okay. We have two. We have two individuals. Rick Baxter and Pat Clinton, please come forward. So, that was pretty cool.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, fellow supervisors.
Good morning.
Most of the comments I think we're going to make was taken out by the supervisor. We appreciate all the comments about the union being involved. It just amazes me that a system of this magnitude can be put in without union involvement. I'm here as our operators that are going to use this system on a daily basis. We don't know anything what's going on. It's like, you know, you throw somebody up against the wall and they'll fight to get out of it because we don't know what's going on. And it shocked us and amazed us that this didn't happen. And we're upset. I mean, we have a bunch of our operators here today. We have union stewards here today that are hearing it from their members. What's going on? What's going on with the fare boxes? We haven't seen anything, any of the bids that went up. We haven't seen what they even look like. Nothing. And it amazes me. And the other issue I think that we like to bring up is how many assaults do we have here before something is done? 24 months, not acceptable. 12 months is not acceptable. We need something done now. We don't need to sit here and have more people assaulted. We don't need somebody being pulled out of the bus over a transfer and beat up with 6 ditches in his head. So if we can prevent one, it's worth what the cost is going to be. But we need a system, and I think Ms. Supervisor Haas said it earlier about the 24 months. In 24 months, there's a whole new system that will come in. That system could probably be obsolete by the time it comes in. So I think that's ridiculous. So basically that's what we're looking at here, is that we need involvement. We have had meetings since then, and I remember when we've had the shields put in, chair supervisor at the time, not chair, supervisor male, came up and said, you know, if we can prevent one assault with these shields, it should be mandatory. Well, that's exactly how we feel with these transfers. If we can prevent one assault getting ready to use paper transfers, that's what we need to do. We need to take action. We don't need to wait 24 months to do this. We need action now, and we need a system in place, because 24 months from now, that system could be obsolete by now.
Council, just giving a little history on our current fare boxes are 26 years old. We're talking about going another 2 years, they'll be 28 years old. And this is totally unacceptable in the 21st century, that we can't move any faster on picking a fare box. From my understanding, the board was supposed to have gotten the information that was going to go out in the bids prior to the bids going out. And we find out that the bids already went out, there was some kind of a problem with the bids, so the bids were reissued. Both of those times, the county board was not let known what was happening. Now, the next bids that are supposed to be coming in are on the 31st of January. I know we're not supposed to know that information, but that's what we know. And this seems like too much is being hidden from not only us, but the county board as far as making a decision on these fare boxes. If Mr. Beam is so well educated in all the different systems, there should be no problem with going by the technology reports that he had from these other 12 cities and speeding up the process of coming up with a fare box for us to use. There shouldn't be any more feet dragging, and I guess finally the union is very upset with the management system, because Mr. Bain has slighted us and said that that we don't know enough to be on the review committee, which is totally wrong. And Mr. Bain said that we never asked to be on the review committee, and that's a big bold-faced lie. So let's, you know, cut all the crap out and let's get on. We need a new fare system to start with, and we need to, if we have to have an all-day pass, we have to remember to put those passes on the left side of the bus so that they are not accessible to the public, so that they can be distributed one at a time to the driver to hand to the person. Because otherwise, we're just asking for more trouble. The trouble with the system now is the transfers right over the fare box, and they're easily accessible to anybody that wants to come in and grab them. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bacon.
Mr. Bacon wanted to have a couple words here.
Did he fill out a car?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he actually did it. There we go.
Can I have a car so I can call him?
Well, you want to call me up? No problem.
Mr. Mason, will you please come forward?
Thank you. Well, just to add to what they were saying, you know, the company says that they have a big concern about cost. Well, if they had a concern about the cost, why would you pay a consultant $85,000 to do something that all you got to do is come as a driver to the public, somebody to deal with every day? You know, I can tell you right now, you go down 27th Street, and his people over there making $50, $60 a day with transfers. Right now, no, we can't tell how much money we're losing, but I can tell you right now, we got a lot of people not paying taxes because they're making money off the transfers. We got people consistently, you know, we got taking the tickets and split them in half. Then they said that fare boxes, we got fare boxes jammed now. So what's the problem now? We go down the street a lot, letting people ride free because the fare box is jamming because we can't get it unjammed. So that was one of his excuses. Okay, right now we getting more excuses from the company than they deliver. You know, all we ask to do is be, you know, part of this process. Just like the county supervisor said, we got to deal with this every day. We got transfers being stolen. I give you a report right now that we make out how many transfers was basically snatched from the drivers and taken off. We got a policy now that we're not even supposed to confront people about transfers, bus pass, anything. So basically, we just driving up down the street, and if you want to walk on the bus and say, hey, you don't want to pay? Well, don't pay. You know, right now the system needs to be changed, and right now is not being changed. We back in, like I told the state, we backwards. You know, why wait forever to do something just like the county supervisor said that's going to be outdated probably in 2 years? So we need more input than we're getting. I know it's understandable that they're trying now, but that's what they tell us, but they're back off tomorrow. So we need to have an understanding right now, from now on, that we will have an understanding with the union and the company that we don't have. They'll tell you one thing and go behind your back and do something different. Everything is complicated to us, but not to them. But they haven't came up with an answer yet. So who was complicated to us or them? Because they weren't working on it. So I'm done with it.
All right.
Mr. Chair, if I may, could I just go back to number two for a minute? I know it's going back.
No.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Item six, informational. We're on item number seven. Clerk.
From the Director, Community Business Development Partner, submitting an informational report titled DBE Achievement Report 2010. This item was also referred to the Committees on Economic and Community Development and Finance and Audit. At our December meeting, the committee asked for a follow-up report, informational only, unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Ms. Webb.
Good morning, Chairman and committee members. Rita Webb, Director of Community Business Development Partners.
What you have before you is our achievement report for 2010, broken down by race and gender. And I will let my colleague, Mark Phillips, our contract compliance manager, explain it to you and see if we have any questions.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. This report is basically of DB achievements based on contracts that closed during calendar year 2010. We were requested to review these contracts and basically take a look at where the achievements were made in relation to race and gender, or ethnicity. Excuse me, not race, but ethnicity and gender. What you have before you is a breakdown not only of the contracts themselves, but also of our disadvantaged business enterprise database. That database is able to be updated and changed on a daily basis or whenever updates or changes to a particular company occur, be them additions, deletions, or subtractions of information or firms themselves. So the most recent information we had was from January 10, 2011. At that time, there were nearly 900 firms in the database. Of those firms, roughly 52% were female-owned, 47% were owned by males. The largest number of firms actually were Caucasian American-owned firms, that being 329 firms owned by Caucasian females and 7 firms owned by Caucasian males. To summarize the activities of DBs in 2010, however, we would say that overall that 109 contracts were awarded to DBE firms with an average contract value of $116,000. And also we have it broken out by ethnicity as far as total dollar expenditures and average dollar amounts per contract. Thank you. Any questions from committee members at this time?
I have a question.
Supervisor Dmitrievich.
Okay, thank you. I'm just trying to follow this chart here. I see it laid out. Okay, so I'm just trying to understand which is the chart from who actually had who was awarded. Is that the third chart?
On page 104, that would be chart 2 would be the actual breakdowns within the county of firms that were awarded contracts. Chart 3 actually shows the number of awardees in comparison to what the database in and of itself contains. So in chart 3 you can see that 31% of the firms in the database were owned by African Americans. Our awarding of contracts went to 26% of the awards went to African American owned firms.
Okay.
Here within the county.
So I guess for the way I was on that third chart trying to understand this, the percentage of the DBE and the percentage of the award, it's interesting because those numbers in most cases almost are very close.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, and because I guess what stood out at first was the large proportion, I guess it seemed like our largest people who have, who are the database and who've been awarded to me seemed like Caucasian women.
Which is correct. Nearly one-third of contracts led by Milwaukee County go to Caucasian females who are business owners and currently certified as disadvantaged business enterprises.
Okay, and then the other thing that was of interest to me was, if I understand this part correctly, which is why I requested the information, was there were 100 Hispanic firms and only 13 of them got contracts, or only 13 contracts went to the 100 firms, which is 11%. Could you help me understand that data?
Okay, there in the entire database there were 100 firms, and that's statewide. Our database has only boundaries of the state line.
Mm-hmm.
13 of the 109 contracts that were let during 2010 were let to Hispanic American owned firms.
Okay.
And of those, only 2 went to women, 11 to men. But if you'll notice, the actual dollar values were substantial. Those 2 contracts totaled $666,000 to women. The 11 to males was a subtotal of $938,000. So there was $1.6 million done by Hispanics in over 13 contracts.
I saw that. That's the 84 to 15%?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for this information. I think we have a little bit of room for improvement, but I really appreciate the time that your office put into this information. This is quite thorough, so thank you.
Any other comments by Supervisor Haas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Curious, are you familiar with the concept of microfinancing?
Yes, we are.
And just curious, I'm curious personally about the implementation of microfinancing in Milwaukee County. That is, just in the county, not necessarily by the county. Do you have any interest in pursuing that? Or?
Small businesses, in particular disadvantaged businesses, always need financing. We have a revolving loan program that we administer to businesses from time to time if they have a contract with Milwaukee County and if it will help them execute on those contracts. We are seeking to expand relationships and relationships with financial institutions relative to educating them and finding out, based upon new market conditions, how do small businesses do business with large institutions as well as small. And one of the micro lenders, I believe, is WIBIC.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments by committee members?
Thank you.
It's an informational item, so we'll proceed to item 8.
Thank you.
Thank you.
From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Airport Director, requesting authorization to amend Airport Agreement Number CN1412 between Milwaukee County and Parodies Mark LLC for the construction, operation, and maintenance of news, gift, and specialty retail stores in the General Mitchell International Airport Terminal Building.
Mr. Mayor.
I'm going to make a motion for approval on items 8 through 11 unless colleagues have separate action on any one of those items.
Is there any objection from 8 through 11 for approval? Madam Clerk, please read 8 through 11, please. We did.
Item number 9. From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Airport Director, requesting authorization to amend by $250,000 the December 2010 agreement with Campbell Hill Aviation Group, LLC, for air service development and consulting and market research services at General Mitchell International Airport for a total contract value of $730,000. Item number 10, from the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Airport Director, requesting authorization to amend Airport Agreement Number TB2079 between Milwaukee County and Prospect Airport Services, Inc., to continue the agreement on a month-to-month basis at General Mitchell International Airport, effective January 15, 2012. Item 11, from the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Airport Director, requesting authorization to amend the professional services contract with Synergy Consultants, Inc., by extending the term of the contract to March 31, 2013. And increasing the contract amount by $31,171 for a total contract of $150,815.
Is there any questions on item number 8 and number 11? Mr. Bailey, do you have any comments on 8?
Only if you have questions, I'll let the reports speak for themselves.
All right. Now, please call the roll on number 8 to number 11.
Wyshon?
Aye.
Borkowski.
Aye.
Dmitrievich.
Aye.
Harris.
Aye.
Haas. Mr. Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to approve items 8 through 11 is approved.
Okay. Madam Clerk, item number 12.
From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Airport Director, requesting authorization to enter into a lease agreement with the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department, effective February 1st, 2012, for the lease of approximately 7,676 square feet of vehicle maintenance shop space, Building 104, and approximately 20 paved parking spaces at Milwaukee County's MKE Regional Business Park, the former 440th Air Force Reserve Station.
Maybe we should take 12 and 13 together, and I think that Mr. Bateman could answer any questions. Seems like it's apropos with the Sheriff's Department.
It is. Will you call 3, number 13, please?
From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Airport Director, requesting authorization to enter into a lease agreement with the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department, effective February 1st, 2012, for the lease of approximately 1,670 square feet of truck inspection facility space, Building 204, at Milwaukee County's MKE Regional Business Park, the former 440th Air Force Reserve Station.
Mr. Bain, take 12 and 13 together.
As Supervisor Brokowski points out, both of these are lease agreements between the county and the sheriff for spaces at the former 440th. The first building, I've got a map up there, shows where they are, will be for their explosive order disposal equipment and SWAT equipment and some small offices. And the second building, for their storage of their semi trailer for their there are reps in the sheriff's office here.
How can the reps come up? I'm glad that you didn't come packing. That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, Inspector Edward Bailey with the Sheriff's Office on behalf of Sheriff Clark. Mr. Chairman, the proposal as it's before you is wholly accurate as I read through it. We have actually some more units that will be able to use this space. This is an idea that we got from doing inspections for similar spaces maintained by the New York Police Department, their Special Operations Division, and with my Deputy Inspector of Police Services, Deputy Inspector Weberg, who went out and saw a similar setup at the L.A. County Sheriff's Office out in Los Angeles. What this will do is take a lot of disparate units that are currently staggered all throughout the county, some at the airport, some at space we have up at Timmerman Field, and quite frankly, a lot of material that we have clogging up a DPW fleet out at Watertown Plank Road. And it'll put it all together in one area that our staff will then be able to respond to. I promise you, with the arterial access, with the freeways, both 794 and 94, it's going to speed response time throughout the county. The parking setup there is amazing. It's fenced in, high security, 24-hour guards. So it's going to allow that very expensive equipment that this county's put a lot of money into to be much better maintained and guarded. The training facilities that you see up on that map, especially up near the top, it looks like there's a hulk of an airplane sitting up there on the corner. That's actually a training area that was set up. County Fire does a lot of training up there. We went out and did an inspection. The training facilities at this location are amazing. They'll allow these specialized units, particularly our SWAT unit, to do training in an area that will have no impact on residential areas throughout the county. Oftentimes these units go out and do training in areas that at least abut residential areas, and that creates some problem for our taxpayers. And it'll allow us to move a lot of training that we're currently doing out at our training academy out at Watertown, or at Ryan Road, 68th and Ryan. That's an executive, really, level training facility. The asphalt blacktop there doesn't really support the type of training that the SWAT team does. They pound up pretty good, whereas these facilities built by the United States military are designed to handle them. So it's a good deal all the way around if you have to answer any follow-up questions. But certainly, if you're in favor of it, we'd be moving EOD, that's bomb squad resources, a truck and a disposal container, SWAT, two armored vehicles, and extensive additional SWAT equipment, two command posts, our mounted unit, which has two trailers, a large one, a small one, and two double-wide pickup trucks, our community policing vehicles, those are the ones that go in all the different parades, and also some of our marine resources, our Boston Whaler, and our we have some jet skis. That's what we anticipate moving down there. Yes, we do. Quick response, that was after that plane went down, the University of Michigan flight went down. We started thinking about if we have to get somebody out a mile or two into that lake the fastest way possible, how do we do it at the lowest cost possible? And the answer is one or two specially trained officers on a jet ski go flying out there and then hold like the cavalry, hold for the rest of the Army to come. I will also say, having done the on-site inspection, Mr. Chair, that these facilities are well-maintained. They were well-maintained by the United States Air Force. I was pleasantly surprised, even shocked, even as a former soldier, to see how well-maintained these facilities are. Very little startup cost, if any. We think the cops will be able to do that heavy lifting themselves. Thank you, sir. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Sir,
Member Council.
Hi, sir. Move approval on 12 to 13.
ALCOM, you do have funding for this, right?
We do have funding. We'll be able to absorb it in. As a matter of fact, if we do this thing right, it's going to make some money because we're going to be able, first we're going to get out from the cross charges out at DPW Watertown Blank Road, but we're also going to potentially free up some space for other county use or maybe even sale of a temperament. So we will be able to absorb it easily with our budget now, and we may be able to make some money on the back end. I'm sorry?
First, government's also going to have emergency management. We'll get some billing that they'll be able to do, but part of the other construct we're also going to have there is our emergency management director has mobile trailers, as all the counties do for disasters, for responding to the public and stuff like that. So that'll be in there as well, so we can mobilize that if it's necessary throughout the county.
Well, thank you. We have a motion for approval. Supervisor Hobbs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have seen the facilities that the inspector referenced, and I would agree with his assessment about quality of the grounds, structures, and I think it would be a fantastic addition to the new MKE Regional Business Park. Welcome to the Fighting 14.
Thank you for those warm comments, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, please call.
Weisha.
Aye.
Borkowski.
Aye.
Dmitrievich.
Aye.
Harris.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to approve items 12 and 13 is approved.
Madam Clerk, item number 14.
Thanks, Chair.
From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Airport Director, requesting authorization to amend Airport Agreement Number TF-1158 with Grand Air, Inc., extending the agreement on a year-to-year rental basis for the operation of a fixed base operator facility at Lawrence J. Timmerman Airport.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Grand Air is the fixed base operator at Timmerman Airport. The fixed base operator is the agency that handles aircraft that come and go through the airport. They're the service station for the airport, if you will, and also serve as the operator for all the based aircraft that are there. And Timmerman Airport is in the same malaise as many general aviation airports across the country, where recession has materially affected general aviation, and Grand Air has been seeing a decline of their revenues as a result. They are in their third, they're about to enter into their third option of the agreement, and they've come to us and asked us if we can help them with some rent relief until things improve in the general aviation industry. We have reviewed their books, if you will, and in fact have seen where Mr. Loster, the owner of Grand Air, has actually sold some assets to keep his operation going. So I think that the situation there is real, and we need to work with them. Hopefully, as the economy improves, we'll see an uptick in operations at the airport. Another part of this is that the county is currently involved in a process of public hearings and workshops and preliminary design for runway extension at Timmerman. This is important for the future utility of Timmerman, because as the aviation industry goes away from the private pilot, because it's so expensive, towards business aviation, which is corporate aviation and companies, they're the ones that really pay the freight and use the airplane on a regular basis. And so I think it's important that we review the potential extending the runway to Timmerman, which is underway as we speak, to attract
those corporate aircraft to serve that part of the county, Menominee Falls, Germantown, McFarland, which is be the we want to make it the airport of choice for those operators. Grant is here if you have any questions about their operation, but we've recommended a series of rent reliefs. I won't go through them. They're on page 2. This will result in decreased rent to the county, which is picked up by Mitchell. Mitchell currently subsidizes, if you will, Timmerman, as for time immemorial. And this will increase that subsidy until things change.
So I watch on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, we'll approve.
Any comments or questions? We have a motion for approval. If not, Madam Clerk, call the roll.
Weishaar.
Aye.
Swierkowski.
Aye.
Dmitrijevic.
Aye.
Harris.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion is approved.
Thank you. Item 15 was withdrawn. Let's move on to item 16. Public Works.
From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, submitting a departmental organizational chart for the newly created Milwaukee County Department of Transportation. At the December meeting cycle, the committee requested a follow-up report, informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Faye Roberts. And this is an informational report based on a request that came from the December meeting to request of the chairman to identify the scope, roles, and responsibilities for the newly created Department of Transportation. We've attempted to actually separate the document. We submitted an organizational chart and an explanation of what our understanding is of the reorg. Or the newly created Department of Transportation, its roles and responsibilities. The document we put together, we hoped would assist the supervisors in identifying key staff when they had questions and issues, and also to separate, since we were once one department, now we are a separate department, who to contact. The fact that we do have to have some type of changes because we were at one department for a number of years, with the separation, it means there are going to be changes. And those changes, we wanted to make sure that the board was aware of. We are in the process of reviewing because this is a newly created department. Our hope is to create a structure that is efficient and effective with a different set of staff. So if there's any questions, we'd be more than happy to address each of the different sections, which also identifies in our information the separation of our highway division, which has now been merged with our transportation engineering and our highway maintenance into one division. So if there is anything you would like to address, we'd be more than happy to answer, if we can.
Questions from committee members? Supervisor Borkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess all I would ask is that it's maybe not necessary for the rest of this term, but in April we're going to have at least 5 new faces, and so maybe as you do the org chart, having these people in place with their phone numbers, and may I also suggest that as you orientate the new people, let them know who's who and that kind of thing. So we're kind of in a fudgy time, if you will, right now, because we still have a couple 3 months in this term. But looking forward, it makes all the sense in the world to be proactive so that when the new term starts, and we're going to have new people regardless, that we should, you know, have a scorecard, if you will.
Supervisor. Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
It was and is our intent to do just that. You know, we're changing a few things around, so there's going to be some different names. But our intent was that once we have completed this, that we will get you all of that concise information. Okay.
Any other supervisor, Dmitrijevic?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I guess that was kind of my question too, because I see there's a number of vacancies, and where are we on hiring someone to run the highway maintenance division? I mean, do we have candidates?
Well, right now the Jack Dakarian is on that in that position, but however, Mr. Dakarian has said that he's going to retire,
mm-hmm.
and so that's all going to be part of our overall reorganization of the department. That's why I said that once we get this completed, we're going to give you the new names and the numbers and everything.
Okay, because okay. Even under transportation services, there was a couple, 3 or 4 vacancies. So
yes.
I mean, it just sounds like this is the general concept of what the reorg will look like, but we don't have everything quite filled in just yet.
Exactly.
Okay. And this was prior to you being here, Director Buslaki, but I think I speak for the board that, you know, we would have liked this in the budget. When we were adopting the reorg, this would have helped us. I think it would have, just for future reference, it would have maybe gone through a little bit smoother had we seen this. But sometimes timing doesn't allow, and we appreciate it. So thank you.
And we'd be more than happy to meet with each of the individual supervisors, the new ones and existing staff, to actually individually answer specific questions regarding any issues for the reorg.
Cool. Any other comments from committee members? Just one, could you give us a general guesstimate on the timeline when you plan on having this solidified, this reorganization?
Well, we're going to be working with the Department of Human Resources.
Yeah, big question mark there.
Okay. But our goal, I'm hoping we're going to start moving forward, I would say, March 1st.
Yes.
And we're working to make some of the changes. So our hope is April we'll have everything good and ready to go.
Okay. Well, thank you, and thank you for providing us the information.
Madam Clerk, since that was an informational item, let's proceed to item 17.
A summary of fund transfers being presented to the Finance and Audit Committee. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee. I do have a revised report.
Well, committee members are reviewing the revised report. Please have a few comments.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Committee. I'm representing the airport. I'm Pat Paulsleiter, the Deputy Airport Director, Finance and Admin. Excuse me. We have 2 fund transfers before you this morning. This is informational. The first one for almost $4 million is to work with the intersection of the 2 runways. We are repairing that center piece this year. Based on a request from the airlines, we are moving work that we were going to spread over 2 years into 1 year. And so we are asking that we have the ability, the funds, to complete the work in calendar 12 instead of spreading it over 2 years. They're also doing a minor change in scope. As long as it's already going to be torn up, so to speak, they will be removing or relocating some of the electrical manholes and some of the ducts in that intersection area to make for future repairs and maintenance easier and more accessible.
All right. Thank you.
Questions on the first?
Supervisor Borkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what has changed?
Between the first report and the second.
A minute ago we were given a new report, so what's the change?
It's in the third item, sir.
The $45,906,000?
Yes.
Well, the original one, we didn't have number 4, which is $1.4 million. It's the DOT Transportation Services. Obviously, this is for informational purposes, and so I'm not going to, not that I would go ballistic, but in fairness to this committee, because in fairness to any committee that gets sprung on with reports where we have not had a chance to take a look or examine or ask questions if necessary, it's not acceptable because it's not fair to us. We're expected to vote, not on this per se, but I know Mr. Busolotti is new to this process, and let me just say that it's not acceptable to be given reports we're sitting down discussing the committee's work. So I guess it needs to be said every now and then, but eventually there will be penalties, and the penalty will be that we won't take action, Mr. Chairman, because it's not fair to us. We're the ones held accountable, and department heads think that, well, they're just going to vote for it. Well, that's not going to be the case. So give that little editorial.
Thank you, Mr. Borkowski. Surprise mail yet, Tom?
Can you, when we said our agenda, we did not have item number four. Can you go through item number four? I see that you have instant funds carry over. You have projects that you do not have enough money for. That's what I'm reading. So can you explain that to me? So are you running a deficit in that department?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Vince Masterson, Das Fiscal. Is the item you're referring to related to a transportation services fund transfer?
Correct.
Okay. And
it's item four.
Item four. I apologize, I don't have a revised. For the, approximately $1.4 million fund transfer.
Okay.
What this is in reference to is we were working, DOT's fiscal staff was working with Mr. Busolaki's staff in transportation services, and there were a few capital projects that going through the process of the fund transfer, we found out we had to do kind of some cleanup on those items, so we wanted to make sure that the correct capital projects that the department was requesting was matching up with what we had fiscally, and we worked hand in hand with them. So the process was a little bit later than we had anticipated by the time we had the agenda set, and I apologize for not informing you or getting this down to you earlier, but that's what caused the delay on this and the revised report that you now have. Essentially what this transportation services fund transfer does is it provides expenditure authority for the projects listed for the first part of the year prior to the carryover process. So what this does, it allows departments to continue on existing projects up until the carryover process, which happens generally in May.
Surprise mail.
Mr. Chairman. One, if you don't, I hope you have this more detail of finance. I want a list of all the projects. You just said 12 highways and various capital improvement projects. I would like to have a list of that, you know, exactly what the funding source for that project, or are you just making up because we had a deficit there for those projects? There's a number of things that I have specifically about College Avenue. Do we have a funding source? Probably no. I want to know if that project is part of this. But there's a number of things that you do not have right here, right now. And I would like detail of all these requirements.
Chairman.
Go ahead.
Supervisors. What you'll have included on the fund transfer that will be included in the Finance Committee, you'll have that lists more of a detailed kind of to and from, and the dollar amounts, the funding source, and the actual expenditure associated with each project. What you have there is basically just a small narrative write-up to kind of give you an idea of what's going on, but that is included, the detail that you have requested in the finance fund transfer.
Can you make sure that you give the committee right here so we know? That's why we have these funds, so we ask the question. So they also understand what's going on.
Yes, I'd be more than happy to do that. And if it is more helpful, what we could do is also include the fund transfers, the detail that we include in the finance committee, and that might be a little bit more helpful to you as you're trying to figure out what the revenue and expenditures are for each project.
Supervisor Dmitrievich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is something that I've asked about as well and shared the concern with my colleagues. And we have improved at least the way that it's... Remember, you said it didn't even have the explanation before. So I guess we're making progress. But I would also like, along the same lines as Supervisor Mayo, sometimes I'm wondering, where is the money being transferred from? So, I mean, it's obviously we know it has to be coming from somewhere. The $1.4 million, for example, in item number 4, was that just, you know, in the transportation budget? I realize sometimes the fund transfers are for money, like, for example, item number 3, it's a unique one regarding airport. So that would be beneficial to have that information. My question really is about item number 1. I could be mistaken, but I feel that I saw the same exact fund transfer the last cycle. That's because I asked about it. Okay, I'm like, I know I got a lot on my mind, but I didn't. I think I saw it word for word, the exact same fund transfer, and I'm wondering, is this the same one or additional one? And, you know, what is going on? And this is one of those where I'm wondering where the money's coming from. Where is it originally coming from? Because to me it appears the second time that when I asked this last time, I had been told that this was to, you know, reaccommodate all of this moving around, and now it's the second one. So, I mean, what is this project? I don't understand what's going on here.
Go ahead. Chairman, Supervisors, you did see this. You are correct on the last committee meeting. We ended up pulling that from the Finance Committee. We pulled it prior to an updated list that you had. So we waited and held off until this committee cycle to run this transfer through. So this is actually, it was pulled and now we're presenting it.
It's not double. It's the same.
Right, it's not double. Okay. Right, and it is an operating transfer. And in response to your question, where does the money come from? Mm-hmm. We're not increasing tax levy here or changing those items. What this is basically the square footage cross charge that's, you know, sent out to all the user departments. Since we had, I'll just back up a little bit. Certain assumptions were made in the 2011 adopted budget, and that was due to a result of primarily two things. The first one being it wasn't really known where some departments were going to eventually end up. Some combined courts, child support, enforcement, a few of those departments. So that's one issue. The second issue was that facilities management was in the process of doing a... basically looking at all the square footage that all the user departments were assessed. And they were updating that because you had some moves, your departments used different space, and that wasn't updated within the last few years. So we wanted to get a more accurate reading of how much space departments were actually using. That piece did not wrap up until about mid-year of 2011. So based on those two issues, the 2010 square footage measurements were used for this 2011 adopted budget square footage charges. So with the anticipation that in 2011 in the fourth quarter that we would come in with a fund transfer and basically realign all the square footage charges to what they appropriately should be, because all the departments are now in their correct location, the square footage analysis was was done and updated, so now we have an accurate number for the square footage charges. So through this fund transfer, we're now appropriating all the appropriate square foot charges by department. So there's no tax levy effect for facilities management on there, because you're just moving the expenditure charges. If one department has 100 square feet that are less, their square foot charge goes down, but another department may see an increase in their square foot charge, so then their square foot charge gets moved up, but they also have the expenditure authority via this fund transfer to absorb that cost then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions from committee members? So at this point, everything is reconciled with this fund transfer?
Yes, at this point, everything is reconciled with the departments via this fund transfer for their square footage charges. Now, there may be some departments that will, some departments are able to apportion some of their, they'll get a revenue cost, cost reimbursement through their square footage charges through federal state funding. We won't exactly know what that impact is until year end, and departments have an opportunity to go through there and see what the impact is.
Okay, thank you. No other questions from committee members? Item 18, is that pulled or 18? Item 18, please.
From the Acting Director, Department of Transportation, and the Architecture, Engineering, and Environmental Services Director, submitting a follow-up informational report regarding item number 5, BTPW, AE, and ENS Division Parks Project, as listed in last cycle's report dated November 18, 2011, with a reflected amount of $500,000. Informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Chair, Supervisor. Report you have before you is an explanation, further explanation with regard to an item that appeared on last agenda in the fund transfers report with regard to a proposed new greenhouse at the Mitchell Park Conservatory. That was a new project in conjunction with the zoo interchange reconstruction project. As the report before you says, indicates to you, the item number 5 was, while it was presented in the TPW committee report, it was later pulled before it got to finance last cycle, and because the funding from potential funding from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation had not yet been agreed upon, and that appraisal process is ongoing at this time. It's anticipated that once that negotiation is complete, that we'll see another fund transfer coming back to committee. Do you have any kind of greater than a more definitive timeline than just early 2012?
Mr. Chair, I would defer to Mr. Busalaki in that regard.
Mr. Chairman. Negotiations are ongoing. Bill Drew and I have teamed up, and we are talking to the Wisconsin Department of Transportation about a number of county issues in regards to the zoo interchange project. This is one of those items, and while we hope to have this particular issue of the greenhouses resolved, we've made some headway on this. We don't have a final. We have earlier this week I sent the WISDOT a letter asking for functional replacement of the greenhouses, which is much higher than the appraised value that or the appraisal that came in. However, we are doing our own appraisal, so that the county has its own appraisal, but it's my belief that the functional replacement will still be much higher than whatever appraisal comes in. So we will report back to this committee and let you know where this is. Okay?
Any questions by committee members? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Sure.
Supervisor Mayo? I would like to receive this as a file, please.
Okay. Madam Clerk, call the roll on the motion to receive and place on file.
Borkowski.
Aye.
Dmitrievich.
Aye.
Harris.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Mayo.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye.
6 ayes, 0 noes. The motion to receive and place on file is approved.
And this meeting will be adjourned. Next time we talk, we'll be leap year.
Day. Get 1 for your B.
That's right. Okay.